man, very spiky hair, mm-hmm. you know, sitting, you know, inside, but mm-hmm. through the window, the glass window, I saw him.
Mm-hmm.
So I went to him, and I asked him, you know, I introduced myself, and he said his name was Joey. He's they called him Joey Shithead. And yes, he was the leader of the band DOA.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, he was a student here. Right now, he's a councilman, the city of Burnaby councilman.
Wow.
Yeah. And he, again, one of those good people around.
Yeah.
I told him what I was looking for. And he took me and introduced me to the station manager.
Mm-hmm.
And both of them worked on it and gave me a space to start my program, which again was like 2 hours like you.
Wow.
You know? And that program still is going on today with somebody called Red Eye or something. They do it on Sundays now.
That's amazing.
That has been there. So that was how I started.
77.
And then I graduated 79 and went on to be an accounting, chartered accounting student.
Okay.
And that aspect of my life, I decided to go to Kamloops
mm-hmm.
to work there for the biggest accounting firm around that time that hired myself and a few others from this campus. We didn't go looking for job.
Mm-hmm.
They came on a job fair and they hired us.
Mm.
And I also say that that year for that company, which is Thornridale, now KPMG, that year for them was 250 students. I was the only black person there.
Mm.
And in my office in Kamloops, I was, of course, the only one. And the only other person close to my situation is a Japanese Canadian
mm-hmm.
Senior student at that time, you know.
Mm.
And so being in Kamloops was a trip.
Mm-hmm.
And in that time, I just had my first child, and going to work was a trip because I would go to work and then few minutes later, I would get a call from the office to come back to the office.
Mm.
You know, because as an accounting student, you have to go and do audits and stuff like that, and
mm-hmm.
do inventory counts and, you know, do the client's books. But they were not allowing me to do that. I did not realize what was happening until that friend of mine, that other person like myself, who knew what was happening, told me, look, you're not being, you're not doing your job over there because the clients don't want you.
Yeah.
The clients don't want you in their space.
Yeah.
And so anyway,
mm-hmm.
when I went to her and I told the client, the partners that hired me, and they decided that I do not fit their requirements anymore.
Yeah.
So even though they brought me to this place, that was it. So I had to pack up my child and myself and my wife, and luckily I got another job right away because I was good at what I was doing at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And that job brought me to New Westminster to do be a part of a two-man team to build a software program for syndicate accounting. Real estate syndicate accounting. It's still being used today, but of course, we don't own it. The company that we created it for owned it.
Yeah.
And but that didn't work either. They said they were, you know, after the 6 months, we did it in 4 months, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
But we were told that, we'll have it. I was told I'll have a job after that. If we did the job, and we did the job, everything was working.
Mm-hmm.
But still, they didn't give me the job. That was just what I was there for.
Mm.
So, and you tried to find somebody to fight for you. That's nothing. Even the so-called Human Rights Commission at that time said to me, it's their word against yours.
Mm.
And we will listen to them first. At that time, they had no fear, man.
Yeah.
That's what was said to me.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, systematic racism. Yeah.
I had no choice. I was just told to shut up and get on with it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so when I was struggling with that, I had this epiphany, okay, this is about you needing to, you have to make a change.
Mm-hmm.
So the radio program I did came back in my head. I decided, okay, and that was this professor at UBC, Professor Lawrence. Who was doing a program at CITR, but he's a professor in anthropology.
Mm.
So his program was more of, you know, playing the ancient African instrument. Oh, look at this. This is that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But when he decided, okay, because he picked up doing that from what I was doing here.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. This, what I started here was the first one,
mm-hmm.
but he started that there, and then when he was leaving, the guy, Ken, somebody that, one of the founders of the Jazz Festival, which I was part of at that time, because my friend and I know him, and he told us that, the professor was leaving.
Mm-hmm.
And that, we can take over. So that's how I took my program to CITR.
Wow.
You know, and was there for 21 years. And while I was there, I started into my journey into the arts. I met my friends at the beach, and we formed a drum group, drum and dance, African drum and dance.
Was this Spanish Banks, Wreck Beach, Jericho? Which beach?
No, it was the Spanish Banks.
Yeah.
Yes, and Kids Beach.
Okay.
You know, my friends, they just came from Montreal.
Ah.
Two other Africans who have went to flight school.
Okay.
And they were pilots, but they were not being given jobs, so they were at the beach just, you know.
Hanging out
and playing drums. I'm very good at it. And
yeah.
I joined them at the end of the evening and said, hey, you know, I have an idea, you know.
Yeah.
I want to, you know, this is what I would like us to do something with this.
Yeah.
So we got together a group,
started
playing and sharing out because we're from different nations.
Yes.
Even though we are all three of us, we're Nigerians. We're from three different nations.
Mm.
So it was really beautiful thing that we created, and it, one of the agencies here, another good person, J.J. Johannesson was his name, decided to take us on and help us get gigs. So he was booking us, and he said that, you know, he has this thing about doing some things in school, and If we can create a curriculum, then he can put us through the school system. And of course, that's a very good thing. That was a very good thing for us to go through, you know, to share who we are and our stories with the kids in this sphere.
Yeah.
And that started the whole thing.
Wow.
That's how we started building the audience that traveled through schools.
Yeah.
And the radio program weekly, you know.
Yeah.
It became very popular.
Yeah.
And, you know, then we started, there was a promoter here.
Mm-hmm.
Peter McCullough. It's Timber Productions. If you know, if you're here from here, Timber Productions still exists today.
Mm-hmm.
His son is running it.
Mm-hmm.
But Peter passed away a few years ago.
Mm.
You know, but he decided he will do, promote this our African artists or any artists, you know, black, African, whatever we can bring up.
Yeah.
And if we will do the marketing, and of course, that's we're already building the audience.
The audience or yourself, and yeah.
So we started through my programming and my connections back home,
mm-hmm.
because I was also very musically inclined. They say I didn't study music, but music is kind of in my
DNA.
Yes,
I know what you mean.
my great aunt was one of the first people the colonizers recorded. You know, it's a little bit of that story on here.
Yes.
You know, so
I share something similar with you like that too.
Yeah.
My great grandmother was the first black woman in Canada to have her own show on CBC.
Wow.
Eleanor Collins. Yes. Mm. Yeah.
Mm. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, thank you. Thank you for sharing that with me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so we started doing that, and was helping him bring these artists. You know, started Sonia Day was the first one,
mm.
really. And it all started with an article with Bob Guccione Jr.
Mm.
on Spin Magazine when they created that.
Mm.
When his dad from Penthouse created Spin Magazine.
Wow.
You know, this was when we, you know, used telephone and telex to communicate. I thought, okay, you know, one of the things we could do to make this big is maybe if this guy would, you know, write something. So just from the station, sent a message to him.
And mm-hmm.
he decided to actually do an interview with King Sonia Day.
Mm.
And that was what blew him up, that Spin, because that Spin magazine was new
mm-hmm.
at that time and really very popular with the young people at that time, you know,
mm-hmm.
for what it's doing, because it was bringing music
mm-hmm.
to the Penthouse family,
mm.
you know. Anyway, so that's what gave us the boost.
Mm.
So we started bringing, we were selling out, this guy was selling out the Commodore nonstop with people like Sonia Day, Roche Rowe, I can't even remember, Benizo Bay, the Milo Poets, the South Africans, Miles Taylor Queens, and I can name it, like every
mm-hmm.
that was every month
mm.
in the 80s that was an African artist mm-hmm. passing through
mm-hmm.
Vancouver
mm-hmm.
you know
mm-hmm.
and these guys were making a lot of money, but they weren't giving us any
mm.
till tomorrow. That man never paid me one penny
mm.
for all the work we did, you know, over the years in the 80s, you know. And this music was selling out venues in Vancouver and other places in Canada in the 80s.
Wow.
But would you believe that, you know, somebody wrote a book about that, about the Commodore, and they never...
Mentioned?
They didn't mention it.
Yeah.
And that was, it was African music, African reggae, and... Yep. You know, what became alternative with the Living Color and Fishbone, those guys, you know, that period, that was what kept the Commodore alive.
Mm. Mm. This is great knowledge, people. I hope y'all listening, man. This is great, man. Keep it going. Yeah.
You know, so, you know, we kept going. We kept going and... but that's been a lot, you know, they put a lot of obstacles in our way. Like I said, at one point, you know, I said, well, if it's too much for you, then we will stop. If you don't do the work, if you don't do the marketing, don't do the promoting, we won't do anything, we'll stop it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, for me, that's a challenge, you know, because I wanted to keep us relevant
mm-hmm.
here.
Mm-hmm.
Every month, every week,
mm-hmm.
till today,
mm.
you know. But in that particular period, because of that challenge, I just kept going. you know. Mm. And they gave me all kinds of names at that time. That they called me the voice of instigator, you know, because, you know, I will. They wouldn't allow us to do it, but I'll make them do it. Mm. Not make them in a bad way.
No, of course.
Because it is there.
Yeah.
You know, and the suffering.
Mm-hmm.
The suffering that we were going through, and that my brothers and sisters were going through, was the big driver for me. Even though they were the biggest part of the obstacle, because they weren't accepting of me, my own people.
Mm.
So this other side was found easy targets to break, to keep, you know, breaking up the community that I'm building.
Mm-hmm.
You know, was very easy, still easy for them, because we have a lot to overcome as a people.
Mm-hmm.
They've done a very big number has been done on us, that it will take stuff like this. Not just me. I know there are other people. I know them. You know, in those days, like, we're talking all the people like Curtis Blow what's his name? Mama said knock you out guy.
LL Cool J.
LL Cool J.
Mm-hmm.
You know, all those people, and Afrika Bambaataa, and all those guys, and those are the people that we dealt with, and through this radio that time, through CITR,
mm-hmm.
you know, brought them all here, through these guys.
Mm.
You know, we are, I am saying, you know, they can come, let them come out and challenge me, if they're still, those of them that are still there,
mm-hmm.
you know, but they know that we are the ones, I am
mm-hmm.
the one that did the work.
Yeah.
Because at that time, there weren't very many of us.
Yeah.
Now, let me be clear. There wasn't very many of us. I was alone in that industry.
Yeah.
Officially, in the industry, yeah. I was alone.
Yeah.
Later on, you know, somebody came, somebody called Mel Warner, but
mm-hmm.
He didn't pick up. You know, he didn't pick up when we put together the plan to work together.
Hmm.
He took the plan for himself. He's still around. We're still working for them. You know, he studied chemistry at UBC. He was working. He's still, you know, he retired from working at the docks. But he came into the industry where I am the only one full-time after what happened with my work. I decided, no more, I'm not going to work. This is it for me. Let me try my best to keep us here, keep us relevant, and through this music, through our arts and culture. I put together a proposal to the federal government to give us fund to get our own place.
Mm.
It was approved by them, mm-hmm. but then our people said no to it. They came to the discussion, to the table, and said, we're not going to support a project that is going to put money in one person's pocket. Well, that one person was me. But this is a project that the federal government, CIDA, Canadian International Development Agency,
yeah.
have approved this project for us,
mm-hmm.
reviewed it,
mm-hmm.
and see it as an incredible thing,
yeah.
for our community. This was in the 80s,
mm.
83, 84. They see this as a great thing for our community,
mm-hmm.
approved it. And I created the project,
mm-hmm.
okay, because I found a loophole in CEDA's funding, you know, capital funding, that as an individual you can apply for the project. So I did, with the help of a couple of professors from this campus. My professors from school, they supervised my work to put this proposal together.
Yeah.
That got us this thing.
Yeah.
That this, my own people said, no, they're not going to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And the executive director of CEDA at that time resigned from CEDA because of that, because he just gave up. He said, you know, you people are, you know, there's no hope for you.
Mm.
Because, and I'm not going to do it anymore.
Mm-hmm.
He left CEDA because my people, our people refused, you know, said what they said. I mean, how can you say that? These people have, you're just telling them literally that they don't know what they're doing.
Mm.
Approving a project that will create 500 construction jobs and 150 jobs for your people and give you a center of your own. So, those are the obstacles that we put in ourselves. Until today, we are still doing that. And like you said, you know, I'm giving you like a fly through.
Yeah.
You know.
I know. I know.
Since the 80s, I have done at least one show a month in this place.
Wow.
Every year. Except for last year. And this year. Last year I did only two because of some health issues, you know. And this year coming up just about the same, because I want to take my time to do it and continue to do it right, you know. I'm looking for young people like you to come and hear the story and then take it over, because we still don't have control of our arts and culture. And the products therein, because that's the biggest industry in this country. Brings the most money into the provincial GDP and the federal GDP. And most of the products that make this money are ours. And we just want to have our own channel in it. You know, but our people like to gather it on their own because of their connection and then sell it off.
Yeah.
So we keep losing.
Most definitely. Most definitely. And I think it's important that, you know, I think it's very important for, you know, our community to, I want to say like, yeah, we must acknowledge certain aspects of the past, right? But we also need to, like you said, we have to heal from these things and move on and stop using our, you know, global colonization as an excuse to continue to hurt each other.
It is. It's very sad.
No. You know?
It's very sad. After Bob died, they almost stopped reggae, literally. After Bob died, they booked, there was a tour that was, were part of creating to bring back the Wailers. So put together a tour, a double bill of the Wailers and Burning Spear. Burning Spear with his 16-piece band and the Wailers with a 12-piece band. And this was going to be the coming back of reggae.
Wow.
And was booked for the Commodore.
Yeah.
2 weeks before the show, they canceled it. They canceled it, and the reason was, oh, because these guys, you know, they're not going to get into Canada because they of their drug issues, you know. And these guys, yeah, they do smoke, but they never traveled with it and you never smell it in their buses or anything.
Mm.
They never, never did.
Mm.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And so when that happened, because I was in the system,
mm-hmm.
and I know the agent,
mm-hmm.
George Michaelo, who was in Miami, in Florida.
Okay.
Was the agent.
Mm-hmm.
And so I called him and said, "Judge, you know, what happened?" He says, "Well, you know, these people, you know, they can come in, blah, blah." I said, "Listen, if you can bring them to the PSAS border in BC, I promise you I'll get them into Canada and they will do their performance
mm-hmm.
at the Commodore." He laughed. He said, are you crazy? It's 2 weeks, right? 2 weeks to the show. And I said, "Will you do this for me? I don't have money to give you a deposit, but I guarantee you that I will ensure that yeah. they are paid double
yeah.
what you are guaranteeing them." And can you believe that at that time, I told you 16 piece and 12 piece.
Mm-hmm.
Each of those bands, none of them is making up to $3,000 US.
Really?
For the whole group. I made that happen for them. I paid them double. That was, you know, at the Commodore Ballroom here.
Wow.
I had 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
I went to the owner of the Commodore, bless his soul again, and one of those good people that I met here.
Mm-hmm.
And told Drew, I said, "Drew, you know, I know it's 2 weeks. Can I get the Commodore to do this event?"
Mm-hmm.
You know, he laughed at me. He said, "Are you crazy? I'll give you the Commodore for free. You know, if you think you can do this, you have a free sound, everything."
Yeah, and you did it.
2 weeks. I sold the Commodore out.
Yeah.
Sold out.
Yeah.
The Whalers and Burning Spear. Took him to Victor, Burning Spear, to Victoria and to Bellingham for that tour, you know?
Yeah.
To bring them back.
Yeah.
And when that happened, they saw it. And guess what? They used one of us to take it away from me.
Mm.
And who did they use? The very person that I tried to do it together with. That is still there. Mel Warner. I don't have it. You know, we have friends that we talk.
Mm-hmm.
But this is what he did.
Hmm.
You know? And I had the pleasure of introducing him or showing him where, the person that he went to talk to, Bruce Allen's office.
Mm.
I pointed that out to him. I didn't know that that's what he was going to do. He was passing my office on Water Street.
Hmm.
See?
Mm.
We are where we are today, and these stories must have to be told the way they are.
Mm.
And we, as a people, we have to change.
We do. We do. And you know, I know that... oh, man, our time is getting cut short because I know that you have to go. But I'm...
Forget the time. Say what's on your mind.
You know, I really appreciate, you know, sharing your truth, right? And... this platform is, you know, for the truth to be shared. You know what yes. I mean? How, no matter how hard it is to hear sometimes, right?
Exactly.
It's because the truth, you know, the truth, you know, the ugly naked truth or the naked ugly truth, you know, it can't be dressed up by a pretty lie, you know, it can't be,
no.
right? So, you know.
For us to heal ourselves, we have to share those truth.
Yeah.
We call it truth and reconciliation.
Mm.
It has to be done.
Mm-hmm.
And we as black people, we need to do that a lot.
Absolutely.
We, you know, Desmond Tutu brought that up in South Africa.
Mm-hmm.
That's where it started.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but that's a tradition. That's something that happens in the village.
Mm-hmm.
You know, where I come, I come from, that's something we do mm-hmm. every 3 years. We call it drinking water.
Mm.
Okay? In the village square, water is fetched from the same stream where we get our water in this big